What are you guys doing this week? I'm like, oh my god, what?
It's September 30th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 45, and I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
Yay!
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And Nick's back.
And Nick is back.
I'm back.
Oh, man. I like how confident.
Yeah.
I'm here. Idle Thumbs.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
How was your vacation?
It was good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I heard you went a few days without the video games.
I did go a few days.
Yeah.
A couple.
Possibly even without the internet.
Yeah. That was the best part.
Nice.
Your iPhone ran out of batteries?
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't go very long without video games because I went home for my mom's birthday. I actually gave her a Beatles Rock Band.
Oh, yeah, right.
As a present. And that was interesting.
Did she play it?
She did, yeah. Well, she's really good at video games, so she picked it up.
Did she win the game?
But the hilarious thing... no, she didn't win it yet. But the hilarious thing was watching my dad play, because my dad just, you know, stopped playing video games at Dr. Mario.
That's pretty far.
Well,
compared to my parents, who I don't think have ever touched a video game in their lives.
Yeah, he did okay for a little bit, but you know, since then it's just been, you know, constant ridicule you know, shame that I'd play video games. So okay. it was fun to put like a plastic guitar in his hands and sort of, you know, glance out of the corner of my eye at the expression on his face, like I can't believe I'm
sitting here. Was he mortified the entire time?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, he was just kind of confused at first. Then slowly, yes, shifting to mortification, like, what am I doing? Like, if
Why
my friends saw
this?
Me doing this, I would be, you know...
Ostracized?
Yeah, more or less. No, he did okay, though. He actually did pretty well. So it was fun.
But your mom kicked his ass.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Did you play with him?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Man, video games.
It's a great game. Yeah. It was fun. It was cool to see that that game does work with the older group.
Yeah. There you go. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Well, we were talking, like, nobody on our friends list plays that damn game, so somebody must be playing it that...
I know, that's true, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Although there are, I mean, you know, to be fair, that is maybe not on my own friends list, but I don't know. I have seen more people from...
I've heard a lot of people who are our age who are playing that game. It's no one we're friends with.
Oh, all right, yeah. Yeah.
Fuck those guys. Don't, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's cool, though. In much less heartwarming news, BioWare released a Mass Effect 2 trailer. It makes me want to die.
Christ. Yeah.
Or it makes me want to not buy their games anyway.
Right.
What
are they doing?
They're just not doing it with the trailers lately.
No. Well, I think the mistake was when they allowed that new shit into Dragon Age, the new shit.
Join.
Because that is, I think, started to slowly contaminate.
Right, and then somebody stepped on the new shit.
That's true.
And tracked it into the Mass Effect room.
Once it was the new shit, then,
You can't, when the new shit's there,
you can't bring the old shit back.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the smell sort of overwhelms.
It's an airborne contagion. So this Mass Effect 2 trailer.
This is like the BioWare poo story, right? The bathroom?
Oh, man.
Yes.
Was that the new shit?
That's the new shit. That was the new shit that was dropped, and now it's just...
Oh, man. So, the nameless employee who dropped the Lincoln Log poo in the BioWare bathroom...
I thought it was Zezchuk.
No, I think Zezchuk was entering as it happened, and the guy who was coming out...
He was like, that wasn't me.
Right.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So, that was where it all began, I guess.
And then, it's like, I got an idea for a marketing campaign.
So this, I don't know how to talk about it on a podcast, but there's just this horrible...
It was a pretty unappealing trailer.
Yeah.
It made me have no desire to ever play Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, same
unless
here.
Someone has to do some amazing qualifying for me for why I would wish to play that game now.
Which is a shame, because I was basically looking forward to Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
And it might still be a good game, but it's hard for me to... It's really difficult for me to get past... how amazingly amazingly unappealing and off-putting and almost sort of revolting.
Should we describe what it was?
So basically there's this bald, like, cyborg lady.
It turns out, mess with someone's head enough and you can turn a scared kid into an all-powerful bitch.
Who has tattoos and stuff all over her body.
Right.
Some are to remember. Some are for kills. You know, good ones. And some are for because, hey, you.
I guess, I don't know if she's a cyborg or if she's some kind of, like, human test experiment. I mean, it's either way,
the
it's the most cliche,
sci-fi cliche
plot imaginable.
Yeah, yeah.
Her name is Subject Zero. Mm-hmm. It's like, great one. Nice one there.
Yeah.
And I guess she's some kind of military test experiment or something.
I've been around, ran with gangs, joined a cult, kept the haircut.
Enough!
I still get warm feelings during a fight.
And she basically just swears a lot and runs around.
I'll kill you!
And, you know, like, rapes Shepard, apparently, or something.
This is just about sex. Maybe you should just say so.
And I don't know.
Switching a shotgun.
And then the Shepard they show in this cutscene is, of course, the total douchebag version.
Right.
Right, who's just, all right, sounds like you're the kind of crazy bitch we could use on this force. Or whatever.
She's dangerous. Powerful and extremely violent. Exactly what I'm looking for.
I'll join your suicide squad. Think you can handle me?
It's just the dark twist I was looking for in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, this is exactly what I needed in my video game. At one point, she asks, who's the badass biotic bitch now?
Now who's the badass biotic bitch?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good question. Who is it? I mean, in particular.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Is it Shepard? Is it Rex?
Who can say?
I don't know. It's a good. It's a.
You're gonna have to find out and play Mass Effect 2.
Right. You know, we're gonna ask some interesting questions. What does it mean to be human? What is life? Who is the badass biotic bitch now?
When that trailer came out, I follow Richard Cobbett, one of those UK games journalists, and he posted just saying, "Dear Subject Zero, thank you for your application. Unfortunately, we decided to go in another less stupid direction. Yours, Team Shepherd." I don't know. Because that trailer was like, it was sort of that she was trying to join up with the crew or whatever. And
right.
I guess
does. But, yeah, Shepherd totally. And I mean, the version of Shepherd in that trailer was totally just like, yeah, I'm all over this.
Mm-hmm.
Shepherd. I don't know. It was the whole thing. I honestly...
Shepherd the later years.
So. Trying to quit. But, you know, like, the comment... I don't know. It's sort of been like a 1-2 punch. You've got this and then a 3 punch. You've got this. You've got the Dragon Age trailers, including the one recent one where you've just got this, like, elf lady or whatever who just... You've got her talking to your party and all of you are just covered with blood. Like spiders all over. Nobody
mentioned spiders all over you.
Blood spatters.
Oh.
And it's just
covered in blood and spiders.
It was a weird trailer.
It was fucking crazy.
But it was just the most weird, ridiculous looking thing. And then every trailer now has the exact same animation of like sex that was used in Mass Effect.
Oh,
I know. Where it's, you know,
it's
like
kind of
the close up shot and then the like either the male or the female sort of coming down.
It was panning around
and it's
and
right,
sort of,
and it's
yeah,
like
slow
the
rotation
exact,
around the arms and legs.
It seems like they took the exact same animation.
We only had the guts to mocap sex one time.
It's just two dudes like
that's why it's always so awkward looking. I was wondering.
All right.
Like, none of the actors will do this.
Now put your arms around his neck.
God.
Oh, yeah.
A little closer.
that's the fucking worst. It's just unbelievable. I mean, and then that, of course, plus those just unbelievably revolting screenshots from Dante's Inferno. You know, separate developer, obviously, but I mean... You know, I mean, we talked about that already, I guess, right?
What do video games come to?
Well, you know, it is pretty gross. I mean, it's just like, is this this is really what you need to do? You just need to basically appeal to the most fucking vile, just disgusting, just cynical, horrible. I mean, it's not all that it's just like physically gross, but I just mean this, it's so ugly. It's so just trying to just to get, and then they fucking the God of War, like guy ripping the other guy's head off in God of War 3. Like what? I feel like in the last few months, I've just seen.
You're going to go out and lobby this, for Schwarzenegger
just,
now.
Yeah, no shit. Like it's, I feel like it's just been the most unbelievable string of really, really overtly, unnecessarily grotesque imagery for no reason. Not just imagery. I mean, the dialogue.
That was a problem with
subject,
last fall. All those games that didn't sell. They just, you know, they were missing that element.
Oh, right. Yeah,
there just weren't lakes filled with semen.
Right. Yeah.
God. And it's, you know, it's not just the visual stuff. Like the Subject Zero Mass Effect 2.
It was the internal Dead Space postmortem. Was
well, that had plenty of like shooting limbs off. Things.
I know, I but they didn't go to the lakes of semen.
It wasn't gross
they
enough.
Just,
yeah, right.
Just gone
yeah.
for that.
Why didn't Dead Space 2, the trip to Lake Semen?
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Okay. What?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Pack up the camper.
It's pretty. It's. I don't know. I'm finding it pretty unfortunate. I don't really understand. Like, why? It seems odd that all of a sudden someone has determined this is like a really important market that needs to be addressed or something. Like, I don't. I mean, Mass Effect 1. I certainly had some. There was certainly some dialogue that wasn't the most spot on, but there was no fucking crazy like. Shitty version of Tank Girl running around saying who's the badass biotic bitch now, you know what I mean? It's like I can't, it's very baffling to me. It really just sounds like
maybe
some
it's like that's the douche path,
just
like maybe it branches.
Well, she's gonna exist
feature,
no matter what though.
I mean, maybe not.
I guess, I mean, in Mass Effect 1
maybe there's some nice girl on the other path.
Right,
Project 1.
We fixed her in this one. we admit we
literally
fucked up.
Sorry,
with Project Zero.
That would actually be amazing,
and
it would make it really morally fucking weird if that was the case.
Yeah, that was
that would be amazing. Yeah.
Here's just, you know, a nice lady.
Like, Susan.
That's weird too. Right. What?
My name's Susan Green.
Yeah.
I'd like to join your
Hello.
Party. Is it a tea party? What?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So that horrible thing exists. I just, it's kind of bumming me out. I don't know. I feel like it's just been in quick succession. And it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess they figure everyone who bought Mass Effect 1 is pretty much on board for Mass Effect 2. So they don't really need to court that audience very
heavily. Might as well just have someone squeeze out a big poop onto your face.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And then make you eat it.
Yeah. It also feels like BioWare games and trailers at this point basically have a checklist. It's like, you've got to have profanity, you've got to have, like, a sex scene, you've got to have, like, I don't know, it's this,
yep.
It really feels like their idea of mature storytelling at this point is, like, these are the things, and
you
got to
have, like, the Chugga Jigga Wugga guitar appear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
really weird. It like, seems like a very 1999 approach.
It really does. Yeah.
To mature.
It's definitely a matter
like
of...
Hopefully the ads actually are like a skeleton in a bathtub full of blood holding a keyboard.
Yeah, I know, right. Total, like, just 90s PC gaming magazine.
Just like,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, like with a big slab of steak in his mouth or something.
Yep. Going back to the roots. But I don't know. They're definitely falling into the sort of M for mature means mature trap, which is the fucking falsest trap. But I think that's where BioWare
rated
seems
M for
to be
fuck boobs,
right? Exactly. So,
yeah.
We've pumped that stone dry
in Mass Effect 2.
In Mass Effect 2, yeah.
Mass
that's
Effect
actually
2,
a skill you can level.
Pumping,
right,
yeah. Pumping the stone dry.
Yeah, it's a weird space slang term.
In space, they talk about pumping the stone. That actually sounds like a weird, like, a King's Quest game.
Pumping the Stone?
Yes. I don't know. Jane Jensen probably made something called Pumping the
probably,
Stone.
There probably. There was Romancing the Stones.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Pumping, Romancing.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a gross topic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Fucking BioWare.
Yeah.
Moving on.
We'll play that. I'll play Mass Effect 2.
Will you?
It looks way better than Mass Effect 1, which I haven't played, but I'm going to check out the sequel.
Nice.
Sequels are usually better.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
They sometimes are, actually.
Well, they are in the case of ODST, I think.
Seg! Oh, seg! Totally segged.
No, I really... I finished ODST this week, and actually, I was playing it on Heroic when we talked last podcast, and I actually just started over at a certain point and did it on Legendary. And
because fuck Heroic.
Because fuck Heroic, yeah. And I beat it on Saturday. And that game was really, really fun. I really liked it. I mean, part of it is just I really like the Halo combat, but I found it interesting in a way. Like, I've really? Always... What's that? Yeah, well, Nick, you...
Continue.
No, Nick is a...
No.
No, that's fine. That's fair enough. You don't like Halo.
No!
Well, I can
no, you
hear...
you don't, though. Are, do you or don't? I thought you didn't.
No, I like Halo to a point.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah,
I mean, I've always liked the combat a lot. I usually find...
Well, it's evolved.
It is evolved. But I usually... In Halo 2 and 3, anyway, I found the story pretty overbearing.
Yeah.
And even Halo 1, I wasn't interested. I don't know. Halo 3, ODST.
Yeah. To me, what I don't like about Halo games is the inconsistent nature of them. So often you hit a level that's just god-awful.
Yeah. That's absolutely true.
And that's the point where I quit.
Yeah. No, I think that's a completely fair
criticism. Is that the case in ODST, or is it
there are a couple moments like that. It's a much shorter campaign, and so it feels almost like the sort of Half-Life 2 episode of the Halo world, which I really like. I mean, with the exception of the hub map you keep coming back to, which does get a little repetitive,
right.
It's a really dense game in terms of the actual missions themselves. They're quite varied. Since they're all flashbacks, they can basically just set them wherever they want to in the service of the story, or probably more accurately, the service and the story of wherever they felt like setting this level.
Right.
And it means they can kind of do it like a... just sort of greatest hits. You know, you've got the awesome like exterior level, you've got the like close combat cramp thing, just wherever they basically need it to happen.
Yeah.
And you very rarely ever run through that just cut and paste corridors. I mean, I don't remember ever being irritated by that in ODST. Cool. Which is a nice change for sure.
Yeah.
It's also just interesting, you know, like you're playing as this guy who's much more vulnerable, especially on Legendary. I mean, Legendary was really when I started to like the game a lot, because it was when I had to actually start being pretty goddamn hardcore. You know, I mean, Halo on Legendary is not easy. You know, I mean, it's people criticize Halo for being a simplistic shooter, but I fully disagree with that. I think it's probably the most improvisatory first person shooter from a single player standpoint that I know of, sort of in the modern, you know, era of games that are relatively recent. Mm-hmm. It is really Halo when it's one of those games that you actually get into and you start getting into the flow of it. You can just pull off the most amazing things just in an amazing fluid string.
Like what?
Well, there was one moment. This isn't quite that. This is more me just freaking out, but it was my favorite moment I've had in this game. I was in this city and I was fighting two hunters, which are these big armored... you fight them very rarely. They're big, sort of almost walking, like alien tank creatures, and they have very, very small sort of
feet?
Chinks where you can actually get to them and shoot
like
them.
A like a weak spot. Just keep going
in this area that actually harms them, and every other part of them is covered with shields and armor and shit, and they are huge. And so I was going through this building and I was trying to get up to like a higher vantage point so I could look down on them with a sniper rifle or something. And I go through this building and I get out onto a balcony. And as I'm right about to exit into this balcony, I just kind of turn around and one of these fucking guys had been following me the whole way, making no sound at all. And I completely crapped my pants and I screamed, oh my God, like physically. and just freaked out because this, I mean, especially on Legendary, those guys can potentially kill you in one hit. And he had just been stalking me silently through this building. And I just wildly threw a grenade and just jumped out of the building, off the balcony, onto the down, like two stories onto the
ground.
Did he
jump out after you?
No, nothing happened. And I looked around and I was just terrified. And there was still another one of these guys somewhere else in this level walking around that I had run away from. And I was just completely freaked out and I didn't know what to do. And then it took me a full minute to work up the courage to actually go back into that building and see if he was there. Cause I was so frightened of fighting.
He was just going to come around a corner.
Right. Yeah,
especially
exactly.
Especially after you had just jumped off of multi-story.
Right. Because my very first encounter with one of those guys in this game was that it was just coming around a corner and one of those guys being right there and me being like, oh my God. So this was like a weird recurrence of that, but in a way creepier manner. And I must have, it was a sticky grenade, and I must have just, by complete luck, stuck it to the one, you know, like, right into his neck or, like, whatever exposed back section he has, because he was dead when I went back up there. And it was the most amazing moment. I mean, it's not the best example of Halo sort of fluid gameplay, but it was a great example of the AI and just the overall right. systems that allow these things to take
it's
place.
It's nice and rare that
exactly.
a game will actually let a guy follow you from outside all the way up into a building, up to a balcony, and then
right.
scare the yeah. shit out of you.
And it nothing like that happened in my previous playthrough. I'd already gotten to that point in right. the game, and it was completely a 100% different encounter. That stuff is great. It's hard to describe examples of the more fluid stuff because it really is just completely on the fly. You know what I mean? It's the kind of thing where you'll take out a sniper rifle, snipe a guy off of a tank who's the gunner on the tank, you know, from there, jump onto a passing alien vehicle, knock that guy off, shoot guys around them who have like railgun launchers, come up to the tank, jump onto the tank, throw a grenade inside it, jump off, the tank explodes. I mean, it's, you know, just things like that are regular occurrences in Halo, and I've never had that experience in other games, but to that extent. But the thing I like about ODST is that it really makes you feel vulnerable in a way that the game acknowledges. If you're playing as Master Chief on Legendary and other Halo games, everyone still acts like you're invincible, but you're fucking not, because it's really hard. Right. The game still acts as if you're Master Chief, this guy who is just the ultimate warrior who can take on anything.
Right.
And that's how everyone in the game acts too. In this game, when you recover your health or get your stamina back, your guy is very convincingly like recovering from that. I mean, he's breathing heavily. He's like panting. He's like, oh God, you know, he kind of collects himself. It echoes how I frequently feel in those situations as a player, in the way that the sort of stoic Master Chief never does. And it does make it more rewarding because, you know, if you lose health, you're not getting that health back until you find an actual health pack, right? And especially in the flashback sequences, that those are frequently few and far between, and it the game really reinforces how vulnerable you are in those situations, in a way that when you do pull it off, and when you do, like when you've died three times at a checkpoint and on your fourth time you go in there and you just pull off the most amazing string of like very low level tactical choices. I mean, Halo's a game where you're making a choice like on a split second basis. They're all very low level choices, but they all string together into a really cool thing. And when you finally pull that off and do something, it feels like you've really achieved it. And I feel like ODST just consistently set up those situations for you to knock down in a really satisfying way. There were absolutely moments that just were frustrating to the point of just, you know, ridiculousness. There was one particular moment with vehicles on a highway that was just unbelievable. And that, you know, Nick, that's to your point about inconsistency, that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I just thought this game was so well made. It really felt like they were learning from it, from their past experiences, in the same way I felt Valve learned from Half-Life 2
with
the episodes. And it's just been super fun. It's just one of those things where it's so well done, despite flaws, you know, I mean, the story is kind of cheesy still. There's even a moment with a male and a female character where they even have the fine, like, you know, it's right. How many goddamn times have you seen that? Stuff like that. It's, you know, they're trying to do something different with the story and the character, and I really appreciate that. And married to such strong gameplay, it's just a really good game. People ask if it's worth $60. I don't know. I paid $60 for it. I'm having fun.
Cool.
Yep.
And smoky saxophone.
God, nobody could tell that the music in last episode is from ODST. I got so many people asked me. They're
from
all
Resident
like,
Evil.
Yeah, exactly. People said Resident Evil. People said all kinds of things. They're like, oh, I know that music. Oh, what is it? I know.
Oh,
it's
the Desert Temple from Link to the Past.
Right. Yeah. No, it's from ODST, surprisingly, and that's what it is. It's actually the particular track we used was Asphalt and Ablutions.
Yeah, which is one of the music tracks from the Hub World.
Right. Which is the only place you get smoky sax, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of music, I put up a song on the website, so that's there.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Yeah, people want a new song. It's not funny or anything, but...
No, but it's a weird, legitimate video game folk song.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
So that's on a website.
It's got whistling.
It does. It's got some whistling. It does have that.
Yep.
Cool. Sorry for going on about ODST again.
So what have you been up to, Nicholas Brecken?
I don't know. I played the Left 4 Dead DLC today.
Oh yeah, the Crash Course.
Yeah,
how is it?
It's good.
Yeah.
It's only two chapters, but the first one is really long.
Oh really?
So you know, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's really well made. I think there were some things in there that I don't think we're in Left 4 Dead. Just little technical things like zombies running under trucks and things like that that were really nice touches. It's an interesting level. It's made, I think, mostly for versus. There are a million different places where you can basically grief people. Yeah. They put like 1,000 exploding barrels everywhere, like the gas tanks. They're just everywhere. And then also at the end of the first level, there's this hilarious gigantic like howitzer.
Is this a turret sequence?
No, it's not a turret sequence. It's one of those moments where you just press a button to activate something in a horde. But in this case, it actually does something. So I was over, near this gigantic wall and just kind of laying traps and doing my thing, jumping around, like an idiot. And then somebody just decided to press that button that fires the howitzer. And blew my face off, and just like,
oh man! Oh,
shit. And then it zombies gross. Like
they modeled it and everything. The skin was peeling.
Yeah, so
you were
fun.
Standing against the test wall for this howitzer. Apparently?
Yeah, basically. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
Yep.
You turn around and see it's pretty blurry, so you can't make it out. But if you had high res textures on, it was actually a huge bullseye, right? Do not obstruct.
Yeah.
Do not lay traps and do your shit
right
here.
Yep. So that's, that was good.
That's cool. Did you get through the campaign? Did you finish it?
I did, yeah.
Nice.
You were rescued?
Yep.
Congratulations.
Does it feel like a, like a full-on good Left 4 Dead campaign?
Well, it's a lot shorter.
It's like a baby
sure,
campaign.
Right, but I mean,
like it's a full-on,
well,
but small.
But I mean, the kind of thing people are going to want to regularly play, because I mean, I know shorter was their goal with this one, to try to make it more manageable.
Right. Well, it'll be in the rotation. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think people will just play it like that. It does work effectively as a tease for Left 4 Dead 2, though. I mean,
oh, really?
Well, I mean, to me, it was like, oh man, Left 4 Dead. This is really fun.
It's still really
when you
fun.
Play
yeah.
When you play a mission that you haven't played before, to me, it's like
you could have five before.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you
this is a maybe stupid thing to say, but I like that there's a shorter campaign because that means that I could play through it at work with friends at lunch.
Well, that was something
goal,
that they
were, which is nice because like at work we've been playing TF2 almost every day, but I could see us actually switching over and playing that occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very clearly made for versus, so
that's cool.
Fun.
I guess my only question about does it feel like a good one is that I know that I usually am not that interested in playing like the farm level or you know what I mean, whatever, I don't remember the name.
Are the contents of those two those two chapters worth playing?
Yeah, does it feel like a good one, or can you not tell because it's still so new? It just feels fun because it's new.
Yeah, I mean it doesn't have a very distinctive setting.
Okay,
it's mostly buildings. The first stage is just kind of like, I guess, No Mercy, where you're just walking through alleys and things like that. But there are some interesting. They did a good job giving you a lot of just rooms that you can walk into, which sounds stupid, but
like that in Left 4 Dead, of just the little just sort of weird pockets off of hallways. It's cool.
Yeah, there are a lot of those, and
it makes
that's
it scary
fun.
As all hell to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you kind of want to go
be
in them,
dudes in those,
but then there might just be a dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the stuff we played from Left 4 Dead 2, like the hotel.
When you go through the beat up old 60s, 70s hotel, and it's just those gray, hazy, noise laden rooms where the flashlight is just shitty enough to not let you know if there's 1,000 guys in there. I love that. Yep.
Oh man, I'm sorry. Really quick detour. I'm sorry. When you mentioned like just jumping around and just kind of running around the level, that really reminds me of when Jake was over here last week and he loaded up the built-in video recorder in Halo 3 ODST. And I guess it by default, I never knew this, did this, but I guess it by default just records,
records
the campaign playthrough. And so Jake loaded up like the first level, and it basically was like 5 minutes of me just like running and jumping on top of like
I'm going to jump on everything. I'm going to see if I can jump on this. I can. I'm going to jump around on top of this for a while.
Putting it in like fast motion, it was just like
Benny
Hill or
something.
The screen
is just shaking up and down pretty much the entire time.
Me jumping onto these like 2-inch little railings and trying to climb up to things. That might be what I do in video games a lot of the time.
Yeah, and it kept being like, can I jump over here? And then I'd see you like, maybe this thing around this corner, I think I found a secret thing. Oh, I guess I didn't. Well, I'm going to jump back down and keep going. Yeah. Oh, I found another thing. Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. So, way to go, you.
Thanks. Good thing I wasn't doing that in an online co-op Left 4 Dead game.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good thing.
Cool, yeah.
It's free on the PC, right? Do you know if it's come out on the 360 yet?
It has. Cool. It's $7.
All right.
It was originally more than that, and people freaked out, wasn't it? Didn't that?
It
went up, and the price was higher than anticipated.
Right. And then they immediately brought it down. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In this over the course of today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think it was $10.
It was 800 points when it first went up.
Right. Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then people said, "Ah, wait, you said."
Yeah.
You said not that.
Did they just keep going? Well, wait a second.
I believe people said that it was wrong, and then it was changed. true. Yep. Story.
They should have kept going. We shouldn't. We should take a break.
Yes.
Yeah, we should.
All right. Be right back.
Switching to shotgun.
I'm back.
Nice.
Like we're back. Idle Thumbs returns.
Oh, man.
After this.
All right, second break. Be back in a few minutes.
Yep.
The wizard.
And we're back.
Hey!
Yeah, to go on a completely different tack from all of the games we were talking about before the break.
Mm.
Before we recorded the podcast, I loaded up the Dave Gilbert adventure game, The Shiva. It's, I think, maybe his first commercial adventure game. Is that...
I think
Jake,
that's
can you
correct.
Confirm
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
To go in a completely different direction from anything we've ever done on Idle Thumbs before, classic style 2D adventure games.
Right. Well, yeah. So yeah. This one's interesting, particularly interesting, though, because it's an actual current, like a relatively recent game, mm-hmm. but made in the style of the older adventure games.
Yeah.
But
you were going to say it's about Jews.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that is what's most interesting about it, for sure, yeah. Is that it's about sort of Jewish culture, and you play a rabbi.
Hardcore rabbi.
You play a fairly hardcore rabbi.
He doesn't take
rabbi.
Any shit
no,
from
he
anybody.
Doesn't take any shit. Well, he can.
He can.
It's kind of up to you.
He probably
you
can, should take some shit, or you'll lose.
Right, it's true. It's fascinating, actually. You play a rabbi who, you have your congregation in, what is it, the Lower East Side of New York?
Yeah.
And in Manhattan, obviously, and... You're basically have this congregation that's dwindling. Nobody comes to your synagogue anymore.
Except Josh,
your cantor. And basically, you give up. Like, the intro of the game is you, this rabbi, Rabbi Stone, you basically give up on being a rabbi. You're fed up with it. And then at that moment, police come to your temple and tell you this former member of your congregation has been murdered. And then the game is basically you, Rabbi Stone, turn into PI Rabbi Stone.
Yeah.
And solve a murder mystery.
Yep.
And it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of awesome.
I think it's really cool. I don't really know much about Jewish culture or anything.
I don't either.
But
I've learned a lot.
I've learned a lot. The game even comes with a like sheet
right,
of
yes.
like a dozen Jewish, yeah. like Yiddish
Jewish
terms.
Urban dictionary. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Well, why haven't I played this game?
You should play it. It's seriously
it's pretty
like,
good.
Interesting. And the cool thing about it, Nick and I were talking about this.
I think I own it.
Yeah, you should play it. A huge part of the game is actually, remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about detective stuff,
mm-hmm.
detective games and how they never feel like you're being a detective because the game just kind of fills in the blanks for you all the time. A lot of this game really is actually about just like having conversations with people, names coming up, or you looking like... essentially breaking into someone's like computer, reading their ledger, like their email, finding correspondence, and then you actually looking up
yeah.
names and places in your like hilarious Jewish database that you have back at your temple.
yes, Ravnet.
Which is yeah, which fits better than it sounds like it does. But it's
I'm not sure about that, but
well, you know.
It's kind of like Shadow Grounds.
I mean, it's basically you know your like little community phone book. But I actually had there was a moment in the game where I was playing, and you know all of a sudden all of the you've played through all the intro stuff where you have all the conversations with the police officer and your cantor and everything, and you go through all this stuff, and then it's just like, well, time to start solving this mystery. And it was sort of shocking for a second because I'm like, well, what do I do? And I basically just went around and looked at my computer and found this search thing and was immediately like, oh, God, what was the name of the murdered guy again?
Yeah.
Crap. And I realized the game was not just going to fill all that stuff in for me.
Yeah.
And so at that moment, I basically had to start actually writing things down. And I've got a piece of paper over near my computer that has a list of just names.
You've got your detective's notebook going?
Yeah. And it's awesome. I mean, some clues the game will fill in for you. Those are used to... like
initiate
actually
conversation.
Initiate conversation, yeah. Right. So those are things that the game doesn't want to turn into like a text parser conversation thing,
right.
Which is never good. Rarely good, I should say. But so certain clues it fills in for you in your little clue book. But stuff you actually search for on the computer, you just have to type that in yourself. And it really does make you feel like much more of an investigator.
Yeah.
Because the game proceeds basically at the pace it takes you to put these things together. I mean, it's things where you see initials in one place and then you see half of a name in another place and you actually have to realize, oh man, that's the same person. And that means that this person whose first name I didn't know must be this.
Man, I've got to play this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
It's done.
I guess it's not involved in this game.
All that's done in a really logical way too. I mean, they keep the dialogue minimal enough to where it's fairly obvious what you're supposed to be doing in a way that isn't as obvious in other adventure games. You know what I mean? Like,
but there are ways you don't know necessarily what's going to happen. Like, if you find a name and you look it up, it's not like I need to find this specific thing, like for this specific reason. It's just
right.
This guy corresponded with this person. Maybe I'll just put this in there and then go to that person's like location
mm-hmm.
and see if they can tell me anything. I mean, yeah. it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really well done.
And I had a
and, you can go ahead. You can have a rabbi duel.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is hysterical. This is one of the funniest things about what? This game. It's not a funny game in general, yeah. but there are some just sort of clever things. You know, it starts off with, you know, fairly somber little introductory text thing. And one of the things it mentions is, you know, why do rabbis always answer a question with a question? And then throughout the course of the entire game, the game basically gives you tone of response instead of response. It basically says you can give an honest answer, you can give a direct answer, you can give an evasive answer, you can give a flippant answer. And then there's usually three of these of various ones of those. And then at the bottom, there's always the rabbinical answer. And that always means just answer with a question. And so when you first talk to another rabbi, if you just constantly choose the rabbinical answer, you guys basically just end up in this endless question
war. It's like a recursive
war. It's
loop.
Hilarious. Yeah.
That's quality.
And he eventually wins it because he's a way better rabbi than you are. Your character is actually kind of a little bit of an asshole.
He is a bit of a dick, yeah.
And it's nice that the game lets that happen, but not, you know, not in a subject zero way where you're going to...
Right, he doesn't kick any doors down.
Yeah, right, it's not that.
Well, that's in the Shiva 2.
Right, yeah, exactly. But no, it's just your character who's sort of done fairly specific things in the past. It's not like vague, dark past. It's like, oh, I guess I've now found out my character did this kind of asshole-ish thing that mm-hmm. I guess I could see someone in his position doing.
Yeah.
But you don't usually assign that to a video game protagonist. And I don't want to spoil it or anything, but it's just, it's interesting.
Yep.
You know, it's definitely a great example of a video game that actually tries to be about something that video games are never about, ever. Like, I don't know any other game that...
There's
you know, it's kind of too bad that that's the case, because this actually plays like a game. I mean, it's an adventure.
It plays like a game.
No, but a lot of adventure games don't. You know what I mean? A lot of adventure games really are just you click to the end. You know, I mean, there are great adventure games that I love, and we've certainly talked about them to great lengths on this podcast. But I mean, there are some that are better than others, and this is not
this game actually has.
Yeah.
Things left up to your brain and also some systems, it sounds like, which is cool.
I mean, you actually have to think about things more than you do in most games, but it's in an interesting way, and it's not in a preposterous, you know, like honey on the cat hair makes a mustache way. You know, it's cool.
like my mom always said, honey on the cat hair makes a mustache.
Yep. Old Jewish wisdom.
Yeah. I was going to say that my mom is Jane Jensen, but...
okay. Is she?
No.
Oh.
It would be an amazing.
That'd be cool.
It would be an amazing, like cross stitched, like Home Sweet Home thing. That honey on, honey on cat hair makes a mustache.
Yeah,
honey on the cat
on hair. The cat hair. Yeah, it's got to be an axiom.
Yeah,
I don't know, Nick. Any other thoughts? I kind of exhausted it. I don't know.
No, I think might appeal to people is that it seems to be a fairly decent length. It's not.
You could yeah.
It's not Telltale length, is that?
No. I mean it's shorter.
It's short.
Yeah,
it's approachable. This crazy approachable. Indie game that's going to take you forever.
Yeah, it's approachable, and I think that works well with the story that they're telling. Things happen that are fairly significant early on that keep your interest, and I liked the pacing of it. I thought it was well done. So,
and you can lose your game for basically completely screwing up in a conversation. I mean, it's. You know, some people don't like that in adventure games. I thought it was fine in this game. It sort of just, it reinforces that particularly as a rabbi,
it does
your words matter.
So,
does it?
Yeah. There was an autosave.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Yeah. Oh, my bad. Okay.
So, I think you could minimize the impact of that.
That's cool. Yeah. That's
good. The Sierra factor can be lessened if you wish.
Right. But Nick, you made a really interesting point, which is that a lot of the way to sort of be successful in conversation in this game is not necessarily to say the thing that's most accurate,
mm-hmm.
but to say the thing that the person wants to hear.
Right.
And that is a really interesting statement about just sort of a reflection on religion, and it's a theme of this game.
Yeah, he's clearly saying some things with this game, which is cool.
And, it, you know, the idea is you're playing this rabbi who's having a crisis of faith, essentially, or if not necessarily a crisis of faith, a crisis of sort of vocation, if nothing else. And it's interesting that the game contextually reflects on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for all the flack adventure games take about being totally deterministic, this one does some really interesting things with letting what you do, letting what you do and how you do it, and the results of that imply something about the character or other characters, or just sort of your character's place in the world in these characters' lives. It's interesting. Maybe I'm building it up too much.
No, I mean, but, I don't think the game does it in a heavy-handed way. I mean, right. I think it's fairly subtle.
It's subtle,
I mean,
yeah.
It's nice.
It's there for you.
It's there, yeah. Well,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're not going to get a puzzle about that.
Right.
You know, I'm like, no one's going to ask you. Well, maybe later, but I don't right. you know, I don't think that's going to be a multiple-choice question.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was interesting. And there were even some cool, Nick, you pointed out, it seemed to you that as you were sort of becoming more successful in the situation, it was being reflected by the physical like distance between these two characters.
Yeah, you're having a conversation with a woman, and it seemed like every time that you said something that she hated you for,
she pushed you a little closer to the door.
Yeah, he would just kind of like walk backwards and recoil, and at a certain point you lost. I don't know if that was based on the, you know, right. if it was representing your...
It's like the insult sword fighting visual representation.
Yeah.
It was cool. It's a very interesting game. And for anyone who has any interest in adventure games at all, or just games about topics that aren't having a battle or like being a hero that kills things, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. You should just check it out.
Yep. That's Dave Gilbert. His company is Wadget Eye Games.
Wadget
Games.
EYE Games.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wadget Eye, whatever that means. Or you can just search for the Shiva, which is Shivah, and it's a video game. You can buy it. It was free. It was free this weekend, which is why I picked it up. Shamefully, had not played it until that point. But I would buy it now. I might just send the guys some dollars via PayPal or buy a thing.
Wait, you should just buy the first Blackwell game, which is his other series.
Yeah, I've heard those get increasingly good too.
Yeah.
So there's that. That happened. We played it.
Yeah.
That kind of classic collaborative adventure playthrough.
Right.
We don't need to talk about that too much, but it is by far the best way to play an adventure game.
Yeah, it is. Cool. Yeah.
You played some Majesty.
I did.
Yeah.
I have a lot less to say about this because I've played it the least out of... Well, I mean, I guess I've played it more than the Shiva, but I have less of a handle on it than I do that game.
Now, the full title of this game, what, Majesty 2?
The Fantasy Kingdom Sim.
The Fantasy Kingdom Sim, yes.
I mean, Majesty 1 was also subtitled The Fantasy Kingdom Sim.
Right. Well, right, yeah. And I looked at screenshots of this game, and it was not what I imagined from the Fantasy Kingdom Sim.
Oh, yeah? What did you imagine, and what did it look like?
I don't know, like some kind of castle building, because that's my fantasy of running a kingdom, I guess.
So you were taking fantasy in a different way.
Yeah, you know.
You meant like Nick Brecken's personal fantasies. Yeah. Castle building.
Right. No, this is elves and stuff.
Subject Zero tramps into your fantasy. What are you doing here?
Switching to shotgun.
Yeah. Ruining my fantasy.
Yeah. It's a weird game. It's a really interesting game, and I wish I was enjoying it more because I love the core concept. I didn't play Majesty 1.
What is the core concept?
Is basically...
It's Majesty.
You have all these heroes that roam around the map and you know, kill things or do your quests and, you know, all the just objectives you've got to do in a map. They're the ones who do it, but you don't have direct control over any of them. You can only influence them to do things by offering up monetary rewards for exploring this point or attacking this monster or defending this thing or patrolling here or whatever. There are all these different flags you can place on the map, and each flag represents an action, and then you can assign like a gold, like a, you know, however many hundreds of gold to that flag. And the more gold you pay for this task to be completed, the more likely a hero, and the higher you go, the more likely a higher level hero is.
So you are literally the king who's placing the bounty.
Right. Exactly. It's actually a much more accurate representation of what you'd be doing if you were this theoretical fantasy king.
Right.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. It can also be amazingly frustrating because sometimes you do just want to say, look, just fucking go kill that guy. Why don't you just go do it? I'm giving you so much money. I'm like bankrupt, right? Because it, you know, the game stops you from gaming the system by doing things like putting an exploration flag, assigning tons of money to it, and then canceling the bounty right before he gets there, even after he's basically explored up to that point anyway. You can't do that because as soon as you place the bounty down, the money's already gone from your treasury. So you basically have to be pretty strategic about it.
So it's just a pot of gold waiting at that cave.
It just happens automatically when they.
Gnome puts a pot of gold there.
Once you put the marker down, the gold is gone, and you can't do anything about it. It's just gone. It's hard. Like, it's really hard because your kingdom is immediately in most of the levels just under attack by roving skeletons and animals and shit who all just come up to you.
Classic.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And you've got to build guard towers to stop them or have your heroes defend. And it's just, it's difficult, you know? And it's
who makes this game?
Well, the original game, I don't remember the developer. The IP was bought a few years ago by Paradox. Mm. Nick had a knowing smile there. Yeah, I mean, they make like all the crazy hardcore history sims, like Europa Universalis and Victoria and Hearts of Iron.
Right.
But they didn't make this game. They bought the IP, then they gave it to Russian developer Inoko, which I guess is a subsidiary of 1C, to develop.
Okay. It sounds like the Russian take on a fantasy world. What could we do to make it possibly make this as complicated as we can?
Yeah. It's not complicated, though. I mean, it's, you know, all you're really doing is setting markers around and then building buildings. It's not that complicated. It's just you've got to be really exact. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to build your shit up pretty quickly in the right order to make sure your town has defenses and you haven't bankrupted yourself. Mm. You know, there aren't very many things you have direct control over, but it's just the game is demanding. You know, it's just got a steep learning curve is really all there is to it.
And you love it?
I kind of don't, because it's just, this game is just harder for me. You know, like it's difficult. And I didn't play the first one. Maybe that's part of it. But it's a tough game. But I love the core concept. I find it really intriguing. You know, the idea that you're basically just like trying to manage this economy the best you can in this way that you're essentially like having these heroes bid on projects and you're sort of just, it's a cool idea for a game and I like it, but god damn, it gets tough. I know there's a demo out there so people can check it out. If you know, to that extent,
go to demo.com.
Yeah,
that's all I gotta say. Really, I don't know. I it's interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't know. Want to do some reader mail?
Sure.
I heard you played a game.
I did.
Nick played some sort of game yesterday.
It might not have been a game.
It might not even have been a game. We went through like every system imaginable, trying to figure out.
I was Batman. we're never going to know. We should read it right now.
No.
Well, we think it might have been a PS3 downloadable game.
Yeah.
We sort of narrowed it down to.
Or a magazine.
Or a magazine, right. We don't know. Was it Core? Was it the sweet, stony PlayStation exclusive?
I don't know.
Magazine?
Is it table tennis?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
May have driven a car.
I walked to the store.
All right. So, reader mail, I guess. Let's see. Jake marked some stuff in here, so if these are bad, you can blame him. Doug Tobacco, we know that guy. He does our awesome website programming. And he's a cool dude. He says, on Scribblenauts, just wanted to add something about Scribblenauts having pretty limited interaction options. The very first level I played asked you to give each of the guys on screen a tool they might use. One of them was a fireman, so I thought, clearly he would use an axe. I created an axe, picked it up, and then tapped the fireman. I then watched in surprise and horror as Maxwell started hacking away at the defenseless fireman. I have to say, I feel pretty bad that my first act in this game was accidentally murdering a fireman with his own axe. Can't help but feel that says something about the game. Doug. Yeah.
I don't know. I've heard a lot of people say that sort of thing about Scribblenauts.
Yeah.
I meant to hand a guy a thing, and then I murdered him horribly.
It's hard to hand stuff to people. You basically have to drag it to that person directly, as opposed to dragging it onto you, then giving it to them.
Right. Did I send you the video, or did you see the one that was linked on Offworld of the people who figured out that with a combination of handcuffs and either a vending machine or a basket, you can just get what the hell is the star thing called in that
game? Starite.
Yeah, you can just get a starite all the time. Like, they just drag it over there, handcuff the starite, or, you know, they connected to the handcuffs, and then they connect the other end of the handcuffs to the vending machine and say, like, fill up, and it just goes, sucks it in, and then you just drag the vending machine to your guy and choose vend, and then it just hands you the star.
That's
and you can
hilarious.
You can beat the entire game like that, which is what the Penny Arcade comic was joking about this week, too. Where
yeah,
it's like,
I tried that, though, just typing in star.
You can't just type star, but I mean...
Well, it gives you one, but it's not the one you need to beat the level.
Right.
So.
But yeah, you can just apparently type, like, H cuff and V machine and get those, and if the vending machine is too big, you can just use a basket.
That's hilarious.
So there's a video on YouTube of someone just plowing through a bunch of levels with that.
Nick just looked like he had a revelation. Did you remember your game?
Oh shit! Oh man, read another one. It's coming.
Oh my god, reader mail. It fuels my brain. It sets the gears turning. I'll remember a video game soon. Metal Gear. Colin King Bailey writes, "I'm writing as I listen to your show. Can you tell Indians pronounce it idly rather than idly?" Okay, so he's referring to the item that Steve created again in Scribblenauts. It's kind of like a biscuit. Go try one. Any South Indian restaurant, as in a dosa place, should have them. You can eat them with sambar or other saucy stuff. Don't eat one plain. It'd be like a wet or unleavened biscuit without any butter. There's dosa on Valencia, right around 18th or so, on the corner there. All right, so this is for the San Francisco thumbs. Maybe 20th, maybe Guerrero. Maybe okay, well, whatever. Yeah, I've been to Dosa. It's a great, it's a really good restaurant. If you live in San Francisco, go there. I guess you can get an idli there. Maybe I will next time.
Also, Colin apparently wrote us an email about masturbation that we didn't read.
Oh.
I only said that because the previous email from him was saying, you didn't read my email about masturbation.
Hey, you didn't read my masturbation email on air. Did you receive it? You know what your website needs? An automatic confirmation email. Okay, well, whatever. yeah, well, I guess I didn't read that one. We actually probably only read about 10 to 20% of the email we get. And it's we don't screen it very well. It's we just get way too much to read.
I figured you'd read the one that included mention of masturbation.
Of course. We'd like you to keep sending it, though, because maybe we'll read yours. Let's see. What else do we have in here? Dogby writes, I only just realized that the intro song started with Idle Thumbs before the whole video games, video games, video games part, since you played the Idle Thumbs sound by itself a few times. I always thought it was I don't love games, video games, etc. That was always really confusing. I can't tell you how many episodes I listened to where I was trying to figure out why you didn't love video games, or what that even meant. Why would someone declare that in their intro? Anyway, keep up the good work, never stop podcasting.
That's a tough one to mistake when the name of the podcast is the first two words of the podcast.
Yeah.
But this is I don't love 45.
I don't love games. Come on now.
Video games, video games, video games.
Mike Mariano from the forums, he says, writes, Dear Chris, Jake, and Nick, I bought The Secret of Monkey Island for the iPhone, and it was half off. In iTunes, this game is listed with a shortened version of its name as well as its application category. So it shows up like so, as screen in the attached picture. The Secret of... Games. Therefore, I would like to ask you, what is the secret of games? If anyone can find out, it's you three. Mike.
The secret of games is probably video games?
Cross-reference that question with who's the badass biotic bitch now, and then you will know. I don't know. Jake wanted me to read that email.
I just like that someone asked, what is the secret of games?
Yeah. What is game?
Also, what
we
is,
like to say, what is game?
What is game?
Yeah.
Nick?
I don't know.
What is game that you played?
I know.
You marked some sort of emails earlier as well.
Oh, yeah. There was actually an interesting email I wanted to read. And Majesty reminded me of it because Majesty has kind of an economic tilt to it. Someone wrote us an email like 2 months ago about Age of Dawn of Discovery that I kept meaning to read, and we went through this period where we kept delaying all of our reader mail. It's pretty old. I have to scroll back to get it, but here we go. Simon Van Alphen writes, you gotta have spice. A well-educated reader mail, he asks, proposing Dawn of Discovery, an abstraction of culture 500 years ago, could be a comment or representation of the current one? Please. Not to mention the age of the game predates colonization of the Americas, and the suggestion that Europe is a single cultural and economic block like the U.S., good grief, or that there's still such a thing as the Anglo-Saxon after they are conquered in turn by the Danish, French, and even the Dutch. Best to just leave the politics out of the podcast, eh? Also, SimCity is an accurate representation of the American model, that American cities should be a shining example of public transport and mass transit if there's such a strong environmental balance preference towards that in the design of the game that roads quickly became impossible. Kind regards to the host, the issue is with the user mail, not you guys, Simon. I don't know, I disagree with this. Simon, I understand where you're coming from, but I think you interpreted what we said incorrectly.
He's talking about the reader mail, not us.
Well, sure, but I think we basically said this too, right? I mean,
yeah,
we had this discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was less that we were saying Dawn of Discovery was specifically representing how things were in the Americas versus Europe in 1404. It was more the developers who are making this game now have
specific influence.
Some kind of vague influence by what sort of
specific to them, to their
economical
experience.
Systems are more common in their region rather than this one. I wasn't making a political statement about which is superior or anything at all.
I got here on a hover train.
Right.
So,
but I think there absolutely are differences between these systems. And I think that there can be some vague, some general distinctions painted between something like Dawn of Discovery and between something like Civilization or SimCity or what have you. I mean, those games do operate through economic models in different ways. And I think there's something interesting. I think I'm interested in games that reflect that kind of thing, even if they're not that overt or that deliberate.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been too long. It's sadly, because I just forgot to read this for so long, it's been kind of long enough since we originally discussed this to get really specific.
Someone will
about
tell
it,
us why we're wrong again. And
yeah,
we'll,
I know.
We'll
that's true.
Hear a recording of ourselves saying, well, I think it's just like the Anglo-Saxons in 1404. Right.
Oh, yeah, the Anglo-Saxons. Yeah, I was using Anglo-Saxon in a much more...
Incorrect.
Like, in the sense of like white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. I was using it in the sort of general like... cultural sense, as opposed to specifically the Angles and the Saxons, who were once tribes and that's not what I meant. But yeah, so that I don't know. I wanted to get that out of the way.
Clear our conscience.
Yeah, I know. Well, because I didn't want the guy to think that we just weren't reading it because we didn't want to address criticism.
Sure.
That I like when people send us
and then say you're wrong and move on to the next.
No, we probably don't get enough emails like that where we're challenged on specific things. No, now that's all
that's
we'll
fun.
Get for a week.
Yeah, right.
Dear assholes.
Yeah.
Wizard bird noise.
Right. Let's see here. I don't have anything else marked.
Just find something.
I'm looking.
Come on.
Dig in the bag. Pull it up by the roots.
Brian Cyborg writes, hey guys, this was a great email. So am I the only one who couldn't get Against All Odds by Phil Collins out of his head after Idle Thumbs episode 44, Salacious Thumb for the week of last month? Of last week? The week of last week? Was that on purpose or am I just a sad man from the 80s? Thanks for blasting me in the ears, Brian Cyborg.
You're a cyborg for
what
sure.
What the hell happened last week?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nick was in a time vortex.
Yeah.
He doesn't know.
No.
Jake, could you get Phil Collins out of your head?
He never entered my head.
Oh, okay.
You know who's in my head right now? Brother Man Bill.
Oh, man, Brother Man
Jesus
Bill.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Steve Gaynor, Hot Scoops, as you know, pointed his Twitter followers, including me, a couple weeks ago now, I guess, onto this this like local Staten area super ultra indie musician named Terrible Tim, who is one of those guys who's just basically been a kind of semi well-known local figure for seemingly 15 years now or so, since like the mid-90s, and he's got this song, one of his songs called Brother Man Bill, that's just I'm obsessed with this stupid song.
Yeah.
And I bought this guy's album off of cdbaby.com and I got it today. Most of the songs are not that great.
Yeah.
But that one's great. There are a couple other good ones. Marvin Weinberg is great. It's basically just he dumps on this guy, Marvin Weinberg, for like 3 minutes and there's a kazoo solo.
Marvin Weinberg is retarded.
I don't know what to say about this man, but it's hilarious.
No, yeah. Yeah, I was playing Left 4 Dead as Bill and could not cannot get that song out of my head.
Yeah, so that happened.
Brother Man Bill with the pills.
Yeah. Brother Man Bill is the Brother Man with the Brother Man Bill skills.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, yeah. That's in fact, the line. Yeah, I don't have anything else marked. Sorry, it's too hard to go through in real time.
Yeah.
Should we take a break or should we wrap it up?
We could just call it a day.
All right.
Call it a cast.
Get some wizard on in there afterwards.
Yeah.
Nick, you didn't think of your game ever.
Fuck. Far Cry 2!
What?
This is the Idle Thumbs Masterclass for September 30th, 2009. I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
I'm Jake Rodkin.
All right. So we're going to read a couple emails here.
Involving the Masters.
The Masters.
Yes.
All Masters only. So Brett Amaral writes, as a kid, I played Blaster Master. I don't know if you guys have, but when you make it to the boss room, a crazy klaxon-style alarm goes off. I have no idea why, but I had to immediately run out of the room whenever it happened. Maybe I thought it was a warning the TV was going to explode. As a side note, not that it was a great game, but how come no one ever mentions Blaster Master as part of the Metroidvania genre equation? Maybe you could play a Blastervania or a Castle Master. Brent.
Nick, are you okay?
Nick is dying right now.
In addition to the Castroid, you could also play it.
Right.
A Blastroid.
Yeah, right. Castle Blaster.
Roid.
Blastervania. Vania Blaster.
All right. And,
wow, Nick is exploding here.
Yeah.
All right. So that's one master email knockdown.
And here's a second one.
This is from my friend Colin, who I went to high school with. He writes,
it's weird that your high school buddy is sharing this with you.
This is the kind of guy this guy is. No, it's him.
And he sent this to questions at Alathumbs.
This was sent to questions at Alathumbs, and then we got a follow up from him saying, why didn't you read my masturbation email?
Right. Well, we're doing it now, buddy.
So
it was forwarded from confessions at Alathumbs.
This is, Dear Idle Thumbs, I'm totally bummed that I missed the request for Video Game Dreams. May I share one with you belatedly?
Fine.
Yes, you may. When it was new, I played so much Perfect Dark that I started playing it in my dreams. Not too surprising, right? Happens to everyone, right? Well, problems arose when Perfect Dark started popping into my head while masturbating. I'm not saying I used to fantasize about Joanna Dark. I'm saying, while trying to maintain an erotic image in my mind, Perfect Dark gameplay would invade my fantasy, ruining my orgasm.
Wait, so it was a ruining. It wasn't even...
For whatever reason, G5 building was particularly prevalent.
What?
What? I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
I didn't play Perfect Dark.
I didn't either.
P.S. He doesn't like the new big white box on the blog, and
man,
the email address is no longer on the front page.
It's true. Both of those things are Jake's fault.
I fucked those up. P.P.S. Remember that time we figured out you could do Paris Metro by jumping over the motion sensors that trip the security doors? Yes, I do remember that, and I remember the time I was caught in them.
Did you get arrested?
No, it was just really embarrassing. Nice. Which is surely why this was in there. So there's the story about Perfect Dark.
Well,
and I'm really glad that you sent that in, Colin. Thanks.
That's a story.
Yes.
We should at some point talk about Dreamcast 2.
Rabbi Stone would not approve of this masterclass.
Yeah.
Fuck. There was a game that I played, like, yesterday, and I can't remember what it was.
Was it on Steam?
Yeah, I think it was.
If you looked at a list of Steam games, would you...
If we looked up your profile and saw your recent played games?
It wasn't Steam. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Was it live? I can look on your live.
You know what? I'm going to remember it, like, at the end of this podcast.
It was PCDL, unfortunately.
Yeah, what... You don't know what system was on?
Was it NES? I don't know. I have no idea. I can't remember.
Right. You're a waste, Nick.
I'm a waste.
Turn on yesterday. God damn it, Nick.
I don't know.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, I am
was
a son
it a
of
good
a bitch.
Game? Was it Loom?
Was it Tetris? Was it Shenmue? Was it
Mastermind?
Was it Jade Empire?
Nah, fuck it, let's go.
Come on!
No, I can't remember.
Come on, it has to be one of those.
You're retarded.
I am.
God. But I mean, Streets of Rage.
Yes.
Oh, man, nice one. Good job.
No, it was Battletoads.
Oh, versus okay. Double Dragon.
Wait, you seriously can't remember the system you played it on?
No.
You just don't want to talk about it.
No. I seriously... God damn it.
So you played it on PC, or you played it... You played it on a console?
Fuck.
Did you play any consoles yet?
Was it on a Game Boy? Was it on Nintendo?
On a boy?
Was I playing Nintendo?
Playing C-Man?
It was on a VMU. I don't know. God, let's just go. I know.
It was a Wonderswan.
No, we'll talk. We'll talk. I'll remember was like halfway Link through. I'll, it'll be in the second
Virtual
segment.
Boy.
Was it on your iPhone, your smartphone? No. FM Towns.
Was it a like Tiger handheld LCD game?
Yeah, was it some sort of Formula One LCD?
Was it a Wonderswan?
I already said Wonderswan.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. Was it?
No. No.
Was it on Linux? Was it a
did you dual
game
boot
on Virgin America? I know you fly Virgin America.
No, I didn't fly Virgin.
What?
No. They don't fly Detroit.
Oh, right.
They used to have Super Nintendos on there. Then they replaced it with a really low frame rate web browser.
Really? How long do they have?
Like Virgin Atlantic was SNES.
Oh, Virgin Atlantic.
Virgin
yeah,
Atlantic
yeah, yeah.
was SNES up through like yeah, yeah, 2004
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, that's different.
You play Mario World. Yeah, Virgin America. We got these brand new planes. And
whatever.
Just
that's way cooler than the
up our hipster
Linux
cred, we just put the Super Nintendos from the...
Dude, that would fit so much better with their aesthetic and fun.
Yeah. It would be amazing if you could just pop an NES controller out and play Mario 3.
Yeah.
Or Battletoads versus Double Dragon. Regular Battletoads.
The fuck did you play? Was it a Java game embedded in a website?
Did you explore a VRML world?
No VRML.
does this ring any bells? Pooch, pooch, pooch,
pooch. Was it Battletoads?
Double Dragon.
Oh, no. Was it Renegade for the NES? Were you, did it involve a game genie?
No.
Or other cheat
was
codes?
Was it a web game of any kind?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Was it... We've listed every system you could conceive. Was it a PS3? We didn't think of that one.
It may have been a PS3.
Really?
What?
Yeah, it may have been. I may have played something on PS3.
Okay, so you may... Okay, is there a record?
Was it on a network, or did you insert a disc into the system first?
No,
it was a disc game.
No, it was download.
Oh.
Oh my god, let's just start. I will remember halfway through. It'll be fine.
And then we'll pave over it with our conversation.
Well, yeah, but, you know...
Oh, well, I remember. Let me finish talking about ODST for a half hour.
Yeah. Yep. Was it? All right, well, I'm just going to look at
it. It may have been an actual game. It may have been.
That's right. I was reading a magazine.
It may
about
have been.
Jeff Goldblum.
I may have been reading a magazine.
He's in a new film.
Goldblum Fancy.
From the International Society of the Goldblum Fancy or whatever.
Right, yeah, the Goldblum Fanciers.
Fanciers, yeah.
The Goldblum Aficionado.
Yep. Yeah.
Know your Goldblum.
This one's Jeff. one's Jeff.
I was like, oh, it's a classic 80s Goldblum versus like...
Ah, right. Yes.
Yeah, where he's like some kind of rapist in a leather jacket or whatever.
What?
You haven't seen those clips? I don't know. He was in some fucking movie.
Remember that time when Jeff Goldblum raped that person?
I don't know.
That would not make the pages of Goldblum.
Like first film role where he beats up an old lady and like
right. Yes.
Kicks her and yells at her and stuff. I don't know. He probably doesn't rape her.
That's the one where you go up and ask him for his, you know... autograph. I loved you in
right.
You're that rapist.
Yeah. Oh wait, it was like a Death Wish movie or something. It was like one of the Charles Bronson movies, maybe.
I don't know. I love you when you were that rapist. I don't know if I ever played a rapist. Oh no, it was totally.
Oh no, I was thinking of Jurassic Park.
Dr. Ian Malcolm. What?
I just always think of him as a rapist. You know?
I was starting the subtext.
I was kind of read between the lines.
Right.
I thought you really brought out that aspect of your character's past.
And then you raped
the
that
rape
dinosaur.
Of the natural world. That's
it was
right.
The rape of the natural world. So, yes. I
glad
see
you
that
picked
now.
Up on that. Hmm. Jeff Goldblum.
This is Idle Thumbs 44. 5.
I found a... A boost.
I found.
I'm going to do way louder now.
I'm having them shipped in from England.
You're having a boost shipped in?
Yeah.
Oh, man. What are you found a drink called Boost?
No, even better. A chocolate bar.
Oh, shit.
They're called Boost.
Oh, man. You found Boost.
You actually, ordered them from
they're
England?
Boost, yeah.
Oh, man. That's the best.
I'm pretty glad that a Boost is going to appear.
Yeah.
We have to eat it live on the air.
Our considerable UK audience.
I'll say, yeah, well, I thought actually, you were talking
about
boost the whole time.
I'll be, yeah, right, exactly. I'll call them out for not having ever pointed that out to us before.
Right.
They should launch a, like a little M&M's competitor.
So let's play with
boost dots.
Boost dots. Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the caffeinated one could be Ultra Boost.
Ultra, yeah, right.
There is an Ultra Boost as well.
Wait, what?
Yeah, there is. There
no
is.
Fucking way. It's how did you not mention that immediately? I don't even believe you.
Also, there's the Wizard Ultra Boost.
No, it's not a chocolate bar. It's male sexual enhancement. It's right. Called Boost Ultra.
I heard a bunch of those, too.
Hey, we're going to try those.
Yeah, you know,
on that same show, we'll be checking out those. Jesus.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Ultra Boost. Yes, that's what it boosts.
Boost yeah. Ultra. Right?
Well, I found the Boost chocolate bar, and then I thought, maybe there is an Ultra Boost, so I Googled that.
That's how you
You are all it. Too yeah. right. God. All right.
Yeah. We took Boost Ultra before this podcast.
Jesus. Well, I'm going to airplane my shit. God.
Idle Thumbs is sponsored by Ultra Boost and Boost Ultra.
We should just line up both of those guys as
yeah.
sponsors.
The oh man, is one of them supported by.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
God, you know why he's good with the ladies.
Oh God!
Oh, we're such retarded wastes.
Yeah.
Space. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Yeah.
Well, that was a good week.
Yep.
All right,
let's wrap it up.
Baboo.
Who is it?